The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Big Thing. Happy Monday. I'm excited. I'm really excited for today's guest. Danny Fernandez is coming on, and I have never really had a chance to have like a full-on conversation with Danny Fernandez. If you don't know Danny, she is a comedian. She is a writer. She is an actress. She does it all. She does it all. And I can't wait to talk to her about a great many things. There's going to be so much that we're going to talk about today. I'll ask certain questions about certain movies. Who knows what the hell if we're watching the same things. There's tons of stuff. And I just remember from being around, like I say, I haven't spoken to Danny on air. We've had many conversations in the past, but I just wonder if there's other things that she knows about. We're in very different generations. So there's a lot of stuff that she's probably watching and has watched that I should be watching that I don't know about. So I'm going to ask her about that too. Also want to see what she's doing, what she's writing, what she's working on, and a whole bunch of things. But before we even get into that today, I got to let you guys know, as I mentioned a few different times, we got a new Patreon. At least it's the SEN Patreon, but there's more tiers, and they're pretty exciting tiers, I got to tell you. We came up with these, and we just thought that it would be really fun. And as we mentioned on SEN Live, SEN Live is no longer live on Twitch anymore, but we didn't want to get rid of the show, and we knew how much people love the show, so we are giving people access to two episodes of SEN Live monthly at the $5 tier. However, if we get 250 patrons, we're going to make it three. And if we get to 500 patrons, we're going to make it four episodes. So that's for the $5 tier. The $10 tier, we're going to do, I know you guys have been loving the rewatch series. We're just doing Batman right now, but there's some movies that people, hey, why don't you do Lawrence of Arabia or The Thing or those types of things. And instead of putting it on the main channel, like, well, let's let the audience vote on it. And then you guys can, we'll do a rewatch at the end of each month. So that's one big thing, rewatch at the $10 tier, plus obviously the SEN Live episodes. And then we're going to do Brett and Kate's Playdate. And they have weekly episodes. That ain't going anywhere. And we're going to try to promote that up a little bit more and do some more stuff with Brett and Kate's Playdate, because I know it's been pretty popular. And then the $15 tier is only three tiers. Pretty simple. One Patreon exclusive. We're going to do a live show per month with me. It could be a Big Thing episode. It could be Sith. It could be any of those shows. And we're going to do one live episode, because people keep asking, are you going to do live shows anymore? And I don't do live shows on this channel, but I will do one on Patreon. So that's everything we got going on. And obviously, don't forget about the audio feed. Subscribe, rate, comment, all that. And then obviously Spotify. We're starting to pick up on Spotify. Just follow us over there. But enough with this. You don't want to hear me keep talking about this. You want to hear Danny Fernandez. Same with me. All right, let's do it. Let's get to the big thing. It's me. It's Danny Fernandez. Let's do it. What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Monday. And I hope you had a great weekend. And we're going to have a great show here today. Ladies and gentlemen, joining the show for the first time is Danny Fernandez.
I don't know if you can see me off screen. I've just been like chugging caffeine. No, I've just been like every sentence you say, I'm taking a sip.
Knock it down. I'm telling you. My wife just bought me for Christmas. She got me an espresso machine. So,
are you addicted?
Yeah, you have no idea. I wake up with the kids in the morning, right? So I'm not a youngin like you. Every single thing when I wake up, I'm compared to me. I'm telling you, you're youngin. And I wake up in the morning and here comes the kids, and the 4 year old is like taking care of 75 kids. So that espresso, it just like welcomes me with open arms. Like, get over here. Give me a hug. So, yeah, I love
it. Two things. Why do they wake up so early? My niece and nephew wake up at like 5 a.m.
What time do they go to bed?
It's like, are you on like military time? What the heck?
Well, I'm telling you, with the stomping and everything that they're doing, and my kid, the 4 year old, we thought she was going to be the calm one, and she's a soprano. She really is. But yeah, do they go to bed early?
Yeah, I guess like 6 or 7.
That's why.
Like little kid time.
That's why.
And then the other thing I was going to say is that I never had energy. I actually tweeted and I was like, shout out to the kids that like never had energy. Everyone says like when you were little, and I was like, no, I never wanted to like climb rock. I never wanted to run. I hated PE. I just wanted to like pet animals. I just wanted to like sit and be with my sticker book. I'm sure there are people listening that are like, yeah, that was literally me. I did not want to, I was born a 70-year-old woman.
Do you know how badly we were hoping for one of you? Like we were because my 10-year-old is a ball of energy and she, and we thought, okay, well, this one's going to be the chill one. We don't know. But that's what you get. Cause I certainly was not. I was not chill. I was all over the place, full of energy. So petting animals and just doing a sticker book sounds like a dream. But I'm done. No more for me. No more for me.
I wanted to be a vet for so long. I also used to take in stray animals. That was, I don't even know if kids do that anymore. But I wanted to be a vet until I found out that you also had to put them down.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, never mind. Yeah. I just want to do the petting part. I don't want to do the put down.
Yeah. It's almost like the Patch Adams of pets. You come in, you cheer them up, and then you take off before anything else has to happen.
That's called a volunteer. That's called a rescue volunteer.
Absolutely, it is. How have you been?
I've been, you know, it's been, I think just like up and down like everyone else. My writer's rooms are virtual, which I think everyone that has moved to Zoom know like what a grind it is. Mm-hmm. I think like the work at home culture was really like, oh yeah, it's great. Like, I mean, people that already worked at home knew that it wasn't, that it wasn't always so great, but having to be creative and be on and like staring at people for like 7 hours a day. You're, like, it's not, I'm not even like doing, like, we're literally like on a Zoom. There's like 10 of us. Yeah. And so you're having to like use your brain 24/7 and it just actually burns a lot of calories.
Does
like
it really?
You're having to use, yeah, using your, I mean, no one's like losing weight. I mean, more like you're having to like, you're having to fuel yourself constantly.
Right.
Because your brain is using so much sugar and stuff to work.
It's true. And I think that we probably relate on this when it comes to the Zoom meetings. And because from you being a comedian, being on stage, knowing and being a performer, you understand the same thing. Like I'm doing these episodes right now digitally and I was kind of pushing against it, but I also felt that it was a way to get people, whether it was people like yourself or people who were out of town that I can have more conversations with. But like, it's the in studio stuff for me anyway, that it's that vibe, it's that energy. And I'm sure it's the same thing in the writer's room where you want it, you're there and you're not distracted by anything else and you're bouncing off and there's jokes that are being thrown out and it's just a different energy.
Yeah. I really feed off of like, I'm one of those people, I'm social for like an hour or two and then I need to go back into my cave.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of my friends are like that too, but I liked having the option of getting to go out and now we don't even have that option anymore. So
I don't think it's going to be for that long. I think we're coming out of it, but still it's just such a bummer in the fact that like we've been okay. Yeah. It's like a tease. Like, here you go. Yeah. You guys, you're good. You're not just kidding. It's like, it's like a kick in the ass every single time. But I do feel like it's getting better and I feel like we're going to be doing more. I bet you, and you can hold me to this, I bet you by February, the second week in February, you're back in the writer's room in front of people.
No way.
You don't think so?
No way. I don't think that the studios want to take that chance. No.
I don't think they want to move.
Well, actually, I take that back. A couple of my friends are doing in-person writer's rooms, but I think some of them have to wear a mask. They definitely have to get tested like every week.
Yeah.
But I think that's a liability for some of the studios. They just don't want to do that.
I just think cases are going to go down rapidly in the next like 2 or 3 weeks. I think they're going to, think that the surge is going to finally start to move out of it. But what the hell do I know? I literally had a statement on a t-shirt that said, I don't know shit. So that's probably the mantra I should stick by.
That is a mantra for all of us.
It's true. It's true. So tell me about, I know you can't talk about exactly what you're writing on at the moment, but like certain projects that you have been writing. When did you get, let's start with this. When did you decide from the transition? Because I was able to actually see your like progression as far as like when we met, you're going up, but you're doing comedy, but you just kind of exploded inside of getting job, whether it was working with Kevin Smith, whether it's getting the job in record. Yeah. How did all that just, and you're a hustler. You work hard. So how did all that stuff happen?
I was gonna say, I'm never happy. So I'm just like a perfectionist. People are like, how do you do that? I'm like, I'm never satisfied. I don't recommend it. working on that. I moved here to write. I actually moved to LA. I went to high school and college in Texas.
Okay.
And then I lived in Colorado for a year. And then I was like, I met Roy Wood Jr. at Denver Comedy Works, and we've collabed on a couple of projects and stuff together. He's kind of my mentor, actually. And now we have the same manager. And so I had other comedy people encouraging me to move here. They were like, you'll never, you always regret it. You know, you can always move back. You can always, I was younger. And so I just came out. I don't know if I recommend that, because I didn't have anything lined up. And another thing is, I don't know if you dealt with this, the people that like might've promised you jobs or like, oh, I can get you on thing. Like they suddenly disappear. 100%. They're suddenly not answering their texts. 100%. They're suddenly not answering their DMs. Yeah. Yep. And so I was lost. I was stuck. I didn't know anyone. I got a job at the Ice House Comedy Club because I drove to the Ice House and gave them my resume and to be a hostess.
Wow.
And they said like 200 people had applied to be a hostess there. And so I got that job, and I started to meet comics, started to do stand up. I met Mark Ellis.
Is that how you met Mark at the Ice House?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I met him at the Ice House. And in like 2014, and
oh wow.
Damn. And then I didn't write. It's really hard to get into. I thought like, oh, I could surely be a writer's assistant. Like, cut to, everybody wants to be a writer's assistant. Everybody right. wants to be a PA. Everybody yeah. wants to just be close, you know, to production. And so I kind of took a detour from knowing Mark and from doing stand-up and knowing people like Joe Starr, and like, you know, I started to pop up as guests on like shows, you know, on mm-hmm. like Collider and Screen Junkies and like these other Nerdist, and people really liked having me as a guest. And so they're like, oh, why don't you, our host is out this week, do you want to cover? And then it slowly came like, oh, do you want to host your own show? And so that's how I got in at Nerdist and Geek and Sundry and some of those places. So I took like a big detour.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people that have a comedy improv like background, they're able to host very effortlessly. You're like, yeah, it's really easy.
It's a matter of being it's a matter of being able to speak and understanding that when you're it's different rooms, right? It's like the same way when you have to navigate a room of 200 people on stage or 15 people on stage. It's the same type of tools that you have if you're doing it enough. I agree with you 100% that it comes easier. It doesn't mean that it's effortless, but it comes easier because you're navigating and you're using that same tool. Because I just started getting back up on stage, and what I found is, as I was going back up on stage, it's a lot easier now for me to do certain things and play with the room a little bit more and play with guests and have it, because it's that tool comes back. So I do agree that for comedians, it's a tool that we're able to use that helps us host tremendously. I think that's accurate.
Yeah. But I should preface, I haven't done stand-up since like actual stand-up since like 2015, 2016. I felt like I was treading water out here, and I was writing, I was hosting, I was acting, I was doing VO work, which a lot of our friends do.
Yeah.
But I just felt like I wasn't moving forward. And cut to like when Mark and I were dating, Mark and I dated from 2014 to 2017. I think a lot of people don't Well, I mean, he's great. We're still best friends. But I was going to say, like, I think it's really funny because people always like equate us. I'm like, we haven't dated in like 4 or 5 years. But when we were, it was wild to see him, you know, hosting, doing this and that, and then showering and going out at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
and doing sets till 1 a.m. And I was like, how in the world do you do that and then go into a writer's room in the morning? You know, I have tons of friends that do that. They'll write for like John Oliver, or they'll write for Jimmy Kimmel. And then they get off from their writer's room, they shower, they go and do stand up till 1 a.m. and they're back in their writer's room. And I'm like, I just felt like I was burning the candle at both ends, and I wasn't moving forward in my career the way I wanted to. And I got really smart. I was like, what are the two things that I want to do? And I think that's how you saw me kind of propel forward all of a sudden, is I sat down. I was like, what do I actually want to do? You know, and it's great that I have a background in stand-up and sketch and improv, because I can use that in my acting. I can use that in my hosting. But I was just like, and writing, of course, having a comedy background and being a comedy writer. But I can't recommend enough, once you find the thing that you want to do, like actually not feeling like you have to do 100 things. because I just felt like I wasn't moving forward out here.
So it's just really about putting your feet down, digging your heels in and saying, well, that's the goal. That's the game plan. And that's ultimately what you did. But it's a good thing to tell people, though, too, is like, throw the net out there and see and use all those things. Because as you said, even though you haven't done stand up in since 2015, you have that tool, you have that experience that helps you tremendously in the things mm-hmm. that you do. And it doesn't just have to relate to stand up. It's whatever you're doing out there in general for people, that the more you work on certain things. Like, oh, that was a waste of time. Nothing's a waste of time if you use it.
Oh, no.
In the line. Yeah.
No, I've used it tremendously. I think it's, I remember once I did I don't want to say what company, but we had to, a lot of our friends, like we all had to, we know each other in the hosting nerd yeah. community. And we all had to audition for this huge studio in front of each other. And it was like the one time where I felt like, oh, it was just like, you know, I could do like everyone was watching and it was so easy. Right. It was like the teleprompter, this and that, very transitioning, whatever. Great. And then you saw people that maybe didn't have a comedy background, understand it background, really struggling with yeah. having to like, which makes sense, auditioning in front of everyone, but like really struggling to transition from subject to subject and interviewing people and being watched. And so I was really glad that I had that background.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's all the stuff that Mark Ellis and I did for when we met. Well, we met at a barbecue at my house, but then we really started hanging out more so at the Comedy Store and everything, and knowing that aspect of each other. But then because we had that comfortability with each other, when we go into rooms, because I can't even tell you how many times the two of us went into rooms together because they wanted to audition the schmoes, right? And we had to do
that
gives you an air of it's funny, it gives you an air of comfortability, but then it's also, you have to also realize that when the other person's not there, it's not always like that. You don't have that person, so you've got to rely on that was where the stand-up comedy comes. You don't have, I don't have Mark on stage when I'm doing stand-up. I got to rely on me. So it's interesting and makes a lot of sense that you say that. So a lot of that stuff, as you said, you pivoted, you started to say, okay, well, that's what I want. How did the Wreck-It Ralph thing come in? Because it was almost like a fun Easter egg for me when I was watching. I was like, wait a minute. I didn't know about this. This is awesome. And how did that all come up?
It was so funny. My friends were like, how did you not tell any of us? I'm like, I'm not going to let you ruin my chance with Disney. The several people at Disney, this is, you know, I hate social media, but it also has helped me in my career and with visibility, is that several of them followed me, including Rich Moore, who's a director who created Wreck-It Ralph. They reached out to me because they wanted real life people. I don't know if you watch Ralph Breaks the Internet, they have real life gamers, real life hosts, real life people that have hosted at these different, they wanted to meet people that were actually from these internet sites. And so they asked if I wanted to play myself, essentially. And it was great. I mean, they had to watch countless videos of me to animate me. That was kind of intimidating knowing someone watched me, and like, they got my, cause I talk with my hands a lot. They got that down. And that was, I'm like, we didn't have to go that far. You didn't have to animate me that far. And like my mouth movements. And then I started hosting with Disney, you know, cause I had hosted with E, I've hosted, you know, a lot of different places. And so I ended up hosting at New York Comic Con with them. And then the Aladdin premiere. And then like, it's kind of once you're in, Skybound.
Yeah.
Skybound. That's cool.
It's funny. We keep crossing paths that way too, because even when, Skybound, for people out there who don't know that they're partnered up with Schmodown and everything, they've been doing these Skybound expos. And they were, and I remember when we did the first one, like, hey, are you familiar with Hector Navarro and Danny Fernandez? And I'm like, very much so. They're hosting. I'm like, that's awesome. And when having you guys kind of throw to the Schmodown, it's so funny how this, even though the space is big, it's so small, you know?
It's, yeah. And that's why it's really important, I think, to look out for each other, to, you know, show up for people. We recommend each other too. Yeah. It's like, we can't have all of the jobs. And some jobs I've kind of like graduated from, you know, I've kind of moved on and I'm like, I have other goals. In my life, I feel like you should have different goals, you know, each year and to help my career progress. And so being able to recommend people that I've worked with the same way that I was, that I became a guest and then a guest host and then a host and then, you know, kind of went on and wanted to create my own stuff. And that's why it's really important to like not have a bad reputation or like dick someone over, because I feel like everyone finds out about it. Small town.
Yep.
And people don't want to work with you and people stop recommending you or flaking. I can't recommend. I mean, you've lived in LA for how many years? People are such flakes here.
It drives me crazy.
And I'm like, maybe you have the luxury of flaking, but I don't. And right. I you know, and so I just stop recommending people if they flake too many times. So many people want this job.
It's true. I've had that a handful of times, and it's like, and it's last minute stuff. Like, I understand certain things when certain things come up, and it's like, hey, and you give somebody notice, but then it's like, if it becomes a habit, it's like, come on. It's fine, but it doesn't mean, as you said, that I want to work with you anymore or that I want to recommend you, because that ultimately then starts to bleed into your reputation, because you like who are you recommending, like, you know what I mean? So that is very important. I agree. The other thing, as I mentioned in the top of the show, is that there's a lot of stuff that we used to talk about. And like you're pretty big into anime.
Yes, but I've kind of I feel I'm in a cave. Please don't judge me. I'm like in this writer's room. When you talk about TV all day, sometimes the last thing you want to do is watch more TV.
I get it.
Sometimes I just need to literally move away from the screen. Actually, I have blue light blocking glasses for when we are writing. And sometimes I literally just go to the ocean and stare at the water.
Probably good. Like, it probably calms you down. It's a smart thing. I mean, the same. I'm with you. I was just talking. I had Freddie Prinze Jr. on, and we both wrote for WWE, and it's like we both had the similar experience. Is that when you're working there and you're doing stuff, you're not watching. You don't want to watch it anymore. You see how the sausages are made. It's the same thing. There's a lot of different things that kind of play. Same thing when he also referenced Star Wars. Like, he was part of Star Wars, and after how sausages were made, he just kind of stepped back. So working in TV, and that's what you do all day long. Maybe you don't want to watch TV. You just want to stare at the ocean. You want to, that makes sense to me. But are there things, though, that you still get a chance to check out? Or right now, you're just focused in on, as you said, you have your game plan. It's the writing right now, and that's it.
No, I've kind of, since I'm not in the reality TV space, I've actually started to watch a touch more of that. And one of the shows that I love that I can't, one of the shows that I love that I can't shout out enough is We're Here.
We're Here.
It's on HBO. It's an HBO original, so you can watch it on HBO Max. It is three drag queens, Shangela, Bob the Drag Queen, and Yuriko O'Hara, who are originally from RuPaul's Drag Race, but I didn't even really watch that. I haven't really caught up with that. I haven't really watched most of those seasons. They go to small towns and they introduce drag to the town.
Okay.
And it's a really big deal because I think they just had two seasons. They just finished their second season, but it's a big deal because it's like they're helping people come out in that town. They're finding allies. They're showing that you can do drag and still be masculine, whatever your toxic masculinity. Like, it's also hilarious. I want to say it's so funny. When I watch it, I'm just like, I just want to be friends with them. They're so funny. It's so groundbreaking. And it's just fun. They're like doing people up. They're like the wigs and the makeup and the costumes, but they're also talking to people in these really small conservative towns to be like, we are harmless. Like, we're not hurting anyone.
And they're doing it.
And it's like a show. I mean, they're up there, they're like telling jokes, they're singing, they're like putting on a whole show. And so I got really into it. It's just like seeing these families, you know, that these people that not only feel they're like their parents will do drag with them. You know, and it might be like a really tough, like biker, a dad that's like riding Harleys and is like, I would never put on makeup. And they're like, can we try? And he was like, you know, for my son, sure. And so it's like them kind of seeing that it's like so harmless to just let people do what they want. And that's
HBO Max.
It's a lot of fun.
Stuff. And HBO Max is doing great stuff right now. It's funny how obviously, you know, they had to step up because it's HBO and everything, but it's still when they jump into that streaming game, because they had HBO Go and everything, but it's different. They got into the game with HBO Max, and I think that it's amazing that with the amount of different streaming platforms out there that they just came out firing. And again, people are always going to say, yeah, well, of course it's HBO. It doesn't mean anything, because you can have a lot of money, you can have a rep, but you got to put out the right stuff. And they're doing it. They're doing it with original content. They're doing it with older stuff. I mean, if you in the background there, I got a picture of The Sopranos, and that I rewatched the entire series again. Then you have the original movies and that whole plan.
Wait, Christian, can I tell you? I had never seen. Obviously, I knew of The Sopranos, and my dad was super into it, but I wasn't allowed to watch it when I was younger. It came out when I was too young to watch it, and so I had to audition for a part where I needed to have like a 1970s New York accent. And to me, that's like Goodfellas. And yeah. So I was like, how else to do it? Watch Goodfellas, watch Sopranos. Sorry, that's how they say it on there. And so I would just copy what like Carmela would say. She would say it and I would say it. I would watch her. And I know Tara Strong said that when she was like learning different voices, that's what she would do. She would just copy what they were saying.
Oh, that's great.
Repeatedly.
Yeah,
that was my whole like fall was just watching The Sopranos, and then I was like, I need a break.
How many did you watch?
Okay, so I think I watched till season 4.
Okay,
and then I was like, I think this is affecting my mood.
It's funny.
I need to stop.
Steph Sabraw is on the show a lot, and she had never seen The Sopranos, and she started watching, and she said the same thing. She started talking very New York and all that, mm-hmm. And I had seen it many times over, but I just wanted to rewatch it again because The Many Saints of Newark was coming out, mm-hmm. And I started getting so inspired. I'm like, I always told myself I wanted to get that painting of Tony as Napoleon with the horse, and I said, I'm gonna do it. And I bought it for myself for my birthday.
Oh, that's what's behind you?
That's behind me. It's
oh,
it's,
yes.
There's a scene where Tony he has
he's
this
dating horse. That
yeah, yeah.
That woman, right? His friend's
yep.
His friend's girl.
Yes. Yeah. And then he gets it sent, and something happens to the horse, and he does what he wants. He wants to get rid of it. He throws the painting out, and then Paulie gets it, and Paulie doesn't want he's sick of Tony staring at him, so he repaints it. As no Tony as like a general, and that's the one I got. So that's
people love that.
But anyway, yeah. So I love that's one of my favorite shows. But HBO Max, man, they're just doing it right all with the original programming. Mm-hmm. So if you what's your go to when you are watching stuff? Is it HBO Max, Disney Plus? What do you got?
Yeah, I have to say, I think it's those like really. I don't know why I really love those like. I watched this season of Queer Eye, and I started to rewatch it. Like I also have a Peloton, and sometimes I don't want to listen to the instructors. So I'll just like put them on low and I'll like actually watch something else. And I think it's that feel good. I don't know. Like I just need a lot of feel good stuff right now.
Yeah.
And so watching them like make over someone's life and seeing them cry and like be so, and I'm crying. I'm like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm friends with them, and it just feels I just need a lot of, obviously Ted Lasso. I've tweeted about Ted Lasso. I went to the Ted Lasso premiere in July. Apple's been really good to me. They've sent me a bunch of stuff. I'm like, oh no, I'm tweeting about this because I know you know I like the show, but I'm like, I'm friends with Christo, who's on it, Danny Rojas. And he's amazing and great and like blowing up right now. And so that's all obviously a feel good show. And not that I'm not into others, because I love that we have a range. It's just so much bad news happening that I feel I kind of need, like I was saying with The Sopranos, like I watched it and then I was like, okay, I need to put something on that makes me feel really good.
I'm with you. Because I think that's so everybody was talking about Euphoria recently. I've never seen it, right? And they're like, you should watch it, but know that because you got daughters and everything. I'm like, look, even if I didn't have daughters, I wouldn't watch that show right now because I just hear it. And I love everybody involved with it. Mm-hmm. I just don't. I just like binged Cobra Kai because Cobra Kai to me, feel good, fun 80s kind of feel. And I'm like, I feel good afterwards. You know, I was watching like Peacemaker. Mm-hmm. I just watched Peacemaker the first episode. And there's some kind of violent stuff in it, but it's hilarious. And James Gunn just comes out kicking with all this dialogue. And that's the kind of shit I want to watch right now. It's not to say that I'm not going to watch deeper stuff if it comes along, and there's certain movies, but I don't need to. That's one of the reasons that I started this channel, is when we were doing Schmoes and Collider, like we covered everything, right? And a lot of the shit that Mark and I sometimes, I mean, you know, you with Mark long enough, we were just like, oh, I gotta go see this because we kept on the channel.
Can I tell you, I always thought that was crazy now that I'm like on the other side.
Yeah.
But like when we were dating, he would be like, I gotta go see this movie. I'm like, wow, how hard. I woke up at like 8 a.m. to go into my office job, and I fucking hate. Yeah. It was like before I officially transitioned over to entertainment. But it is funny when no one wants to see a bad movie. No one wants to sit through like 2 hours of a bad movie, and then you get another bad movie and you're like, ugh. So, but I always thought that was funny. I was like, wow, your life is so hard. And now people are like, wow, you write television. You just like sit there and get to write TV, and you're, you know, you can't handle it and have to go stare at the ocean.
Isn't that funny how that all comes to a circle? Yeah. Cause I remember I didn't want it to feel like work anymore. And that was the same thing to where Mark and I both, we're on the same page. We just didn't want it to feel like work anymore. And the problem is that you get to a place, especially with having a family, and I've been pretty vocal about it. I couldn't, I don't really, I couldn't stand my time at Collider. It had nothing to do with the people I was working with. I love all the people I work with, but it was like, it felt corporate. And even though we're talking about movies, it felt like this is what you need to talk about. This is what's popular. This is blah, blah, blah. And I still talk about shit that's popular now, but I do it on my own watch. And I do it because that's what I feel like talking about. And I have some fun. And if I want to go see it, if a screening comes in, I want to see that movie. So I'll go in and I'll cover it. And if it's shit, it's shit. I'll still talk about it. But it's like, oh, because it's always a crapshoot because it's subjective, right? There's a movie I'm sure that you and I could talk about. There's something that you hate and I love it, but it's a crapshoot. Like, I didn't mind going to the movie. That was fun to me. I'm like, that was terrible. I felt like I had like ice picks in my eyes, but I can choose to go now as opposed to you guys got to cover this now. Or when Mark and I were doing it, it was four movies a week would come out and we knew that, okay, well, people are going to be talking about this one, or we just want to make sure that we're in the sphere and people know because we were getting our Rotten Tomatoes and doing all this stuff. But I think we earned our stripes at this point. So that's, So anyway, but the other thing I'm not going to pretend that I know all about it. I did a little research on it, but I don't know enough about it. I want to hear what you were telling me about with the mushrooms. Like,
I'm so happy to talk to you about this.
Tell me this.
So I've been pretty open since my inception on social media about mental health and my journey with mental health and the different things. I've done everything, Christian. I've guinea pigged myself. I've done like clinical ketamine with a doctor. Actually, like Neil Brennan talked about it a lot, and we actually had the same doctor. We both hated it. I didn't like it. I didn't like it just felt like my soul had been flung out of my body in a not fun way, in a very like anxiety inducing where I was put under for an hour and I thought it was like 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Like I just lost all track of time. So that I've done like TMS, which is transcranial magnetic stimulation, where they stimulate understimulated areas of your brain. That I do recommend. I like that a lot. And a bunch of other things, and also shrooms. I started doing, somebody was like, I feel like the thing that you're missing, because I've done a wealth of therapy, all the different therapies. I've seen a lot of different therapists, and they've all helped me in different ways, but it was just like, there was just something that I couldn't, like a wall or something that I couldn't get past.
Right.
And so in April or May, I started microdosing shrooms. And so what I do is I get from a person, because I believe they're still illicit. They shouldn't be. They're like literally of the earth. It should just be like weed, which should also, I know it's hard to get in certain areas of the country, definitely not here. But I have a little capsule and I open it and I put like half of it into like water or tea or whatever. That's a microdose. So I'm not taking like enough to hallucinate. I take enough that I can talk to you like this. You know, I can be in my writer's room and stuff. And it's made such a difference. It's made such a difference. It's really helped.
I read about it. You told me about it. I said, oh, let me check it out. I read about a little bit about it and there it's becoming pretty popular. A lot of people have been doing this. And how did you find out about it all the way through and then decide, okay, were you nervous into it? Like
at this point, I don't think no. I mean, it was last year and it was like the pandemic had like come back around and I was just like, I was pitching and shows at the time that were just, it was the hardest year to pitch and sell something because studios had lost a ton of money and the stuff that they had picked up, they now had COVID protocols. A ton of their budget had to go to testing everybody, making sure a nurse was on set, like all of these things that we don't even like Marvel films, you know, getting shut down, having, you know, a whole big part of their budget going to COVID. And like, so us smaller independent people having to deal with that. And so it was just like these killer ideas that I was working on one with Sony that they were, I still love my execs at Sony and they were in love with it, but it just didn't go through. It was just so hard pushing stuff through. And I just didn't feel like I was moving forward in my career. I think a lot of us have felt stalled the last year or so. And, I saw a healer that I had been working with and she said, I think you should try, I do shrooms and I think you should try them, microdosing them, you know? And so I used her shrooms person and okay. So the first day I took it, I was like, this just feels like an edible. Like I just feel a touch high. Like, I've felt this before. All right. And I remember I stayed up a little late. I was like going to sleep at 1 a.m. I was laying my head down on my bed and all of a sudden, right as I laid my head down, it was like, everything is working out for me. I love my life. I love my apartment. I love what I do. I'm so lucky to get to do what I do. And I was like, what the fuck? I remember I was like, whoa, is this what y'all are talking about?
Yeah.
And so for me, it feels like a pep in my one. You can't do it all the time
because it opens, opens a different chamber in your mind. Because I tripped balls in college. I'll tell you that. This is years and years ago, and I haven't done it. I did acid, and it's very different from shrooms for sure.
Yeah,
I did shrooms. It was the same thing. It was in the side of the it's that portion of your brain that you go, I felt that. I didn't know I could open that chamber before, but then you're like, I can't do this all the time. But this is more so of, like you said, like micro dosing.
Tiny doses.
Yeah, and it opened up like a different portion of you saying, okay, instead of me saying, oh, this is not going to work, I'm going to run into a wall here. Uh-huh. You started going to a different mindset.
Yeah, I think it works with neurofeedback loops. And honestly, there are a couple of documentaries on Netflix that you can watch. I think one is Fantastic Fungi, where it shows like actually shrooms when they grow, like they mimic the like brainstem, like they mimic our brain. Mm-hmm. And is it kind of like I was saying with TMS, it kind of like turns on these understimulated areas of your brain, kind of like opening it up, awakening them. And so you can't take it all the time, I think, because it kind of wears off. So typically you might do like 1 day on, 2 days off, or 2 days on, 2 days off, something like that, where you need some time for your brain to not be not taking them in and kind of like have that downtime. But it still has the after effects. I almost feel like the day after I've taken my shrooms, I feel even better. And it really just feels like a pep in your step, like you have this positive, like you're getting a boost of positivity. For me, it feels like if I were going to the beach with my friends and like my favorite song is playing and it's my birthday and I know everyone's going to have a good time, and it kind of like just re-changes your mood.
Yeah.
And so I gave it to a friend of mine, and she was like, I checked in on her and she was like, I'm off my Cymbalta. She was like, I still take Lamictal. I take Lamictal. I want to tell people, I think it's okay to obviously still take medicine. I'm not saying like this is in place of medicine, but for some people it can be if they only need like a little bit of an edge. I still take my medicine, but even with that medicine, it wasn't doing enough. And so now with the shrooms, it's kind of just like what I needed specifically for my brain to be in a better place.
Well, look, I mean, and as you said, like from knowing you for at least the last like 5-6 years, that like you have been very vocal about mental health, and you have been out there trying to help people and been active that way. So this is something that I'm glad to hear that this is working out for you, and that because you do seem like you have that pep in your step.
That's because I've been chugging. Also, I have my little Grogu. I don't know if you can see it.
Are you watching Boba right now?
That's the one thing I feel bad I haven't. I'll feel like I'll sit down and like watch all of it. I think everyone knows like I'm a huge Mandalorian fan. Yeah. So I don't know why. I mean, I know why I haven't. I'm like, I don't know why I haven't, other than I'm
slammed.
Slammed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sorry. Let's talk some movies then. Let's talk about movies that you like, some of your favorite movies. I don't care if it's, I know that you love the Goofy movie. We know this. We know that you love the Goofy. My kids are watching that though, by the way. Like they discovered it on Disney Plus, and
have you watched it? Do you the little Hi Dad Soup moment? It's like a very bonding movie.
I can't tell you that it's kind of like an in passing, like when I sat down, because it was after my time. So there were certain movies that I watched probably 10 years prior that were ones that I can go, oh, look at that. That's nostalgic to me. Like perfect example for this. This is not a kid's show, but the nostalgia that really kicked in. We just started doing the Batman rewatches. Mm. And so Batman 89, the Tim Burton, you know, Michael Keaton one. We did a review with Winston Marshall and Coy, and we talked about it, and they enjoyed it for sure, but they were watching it in different eyes than I was. I was watching it with nostalgic eyes, right? Like, so I'm sure for the Goofy movie, for you, you probably have so many memories as a kid and things that just every time you watch it just kind of pops up for you. And that's how I felt watching Batman. And so to answer your question, to watch like the kids, like they're going to have those moments of a lot of different things, because I show my kids everything. I don't want my kids to just be like in their generation. I want my oldest watched, and this is what I love about her, she watched West Side Story, but she wanted to watch the original first before she watched the remake. And that's what I loved. And I'm like, some kids, they don't want to watch the 1961 version, whatever it is. She did. She watched it. Then she watched the new one and she loved both of them. So I like to show them and give them as much, you know, history and knowledge into film as possible. But yeah, Goofy Movie, they loved it. So I watch their eyes. If they're happy about it and they're singing the songs, then it's a win for me.
One day when you're sitting there and you like actually get to watch it, it's really sweet and slightly heartbreaking because Goofy just wants to be close to his teenage son, and his teenage son is at this age where he's like, you're embarrassing and I don't want to be around you. And so they end up going on this road trip together where Goofy is just like, I just want to be part of your life. And it's so sad. And you're like, oh my God. You should show them Twilight Zone.
I was going to ask you about that because that's like one of your big things. Because I remember when, didn't one year you and Marco dressed up like that at Halloween? Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I remember. Yeah, I was Rod Serling. I also got to be in a Rod Serling documentary called Remembering Rod. And that was great. My brother, it's a tradition to watch it at New Year's. And because that's how we got into it growing up, we watched it at New Year's. They always have a marathon. And so this New Year's, my brother was showing every year. He has it on like kind of the background when they're making tamales or like have it or hanging out or whatever. My niece and nephew will be watching Twilight Zone. And it's so funny because we'll be like cooking and we can see them and they're just sitting there watching it. They're like too young, you know, to really know much, and like a couple of the parts are too scary, but it's just funny that they're watching it the way that we did, and I'm sure it'll be a thing for them as they get older.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing. I think my kids might be a little too young for that yet, but I do think my oldest would respond to that, because I definitely want to. Twilight Zone is one of the I think not talked about enough as time goes on, to be honest with you. How revolutionary it was to television and everything that it did. But go-to movies. What are your go-to movies? Obviously Goofy Movie,
one of my favorite movies is Fool's Russian.
Is that Matthew McConaughey?
It's Matthew Perry and Selma Hayek.
Oh, right.
And it's classic 90s rom-com, classic 90s comedy. Yeah. I love the writing. It's based on a real life story of these two people from two totally different worlds that end up falling for each other, and like their families don't want them together. And I don't know, it just, her family felt so much like my family. And it's really funny because over the decades, people are like, this is a really stereotypical view of Mexicans. And I'm like, yeah, but it's also true. Like, I feel my family's always like, one, they believe in signs. They're super superstitious. They're always lighting candles. They're always like, so many of the things that she does. My family is so Catholic. That her family does is what my family does. And so we grew up watching. I watched this movie when I was little. We would watch it like every year, every time it was like playing on TV. And so over time, that's what my nostalgia is for. So that's a feel good movie too. Yeah. That's a feel good if you want to put something on. I love that movie.
Well, it also goes back to what we were just talking about. It's like, it's amazing how like there's just these little things of how you find a movie in the first place, what it says to you, how you relate to it, and how that ultimately you'll always take that with you, because I'm sure that even if you're tired and you're coming back from the writing room and that movie pops on, you're like, all right, I'll watch a little bit of it right now. Right. There's always, there's always those kind of movies that do that. And that's why I think the go-to, I might even title this episode, what are your go-to movies? Because I think that's always a fun conversation. Like for me,
have your kids gotten to see Encanto?
Yeah, they love it. Oh, they love it.
So are you addicted to those songs? Are so wormhole, like Manning, just like worm their way.
It plays in my living.
The Bruno one. Oh, we don't talk about Bruno. Is number 5 on the Hot 100.
I know.
It's going against like Lil Nas X and like all like it's like up there with regular songs.
Listen, this is an Encanto house. My kids love it. The 4-year-old this morning. This is why. Not only do I love Encanto because it's a good movie. Mm-hmm. This saves me so much stress in the morning because we just got one of those the Apple Pods, the
mini
Alexa
pod.
Yeah, the mini pod.
Yeah.
So it like the Alexa of Apple. And it's so she was starting to get a little feisty in the morning, and I just said, hey Siri, play the Encanto soundtrack, and her eyes light up. She moves everything out of the living room. She just moves everything to the side, and she knows the words, and she moves around. And then when the 10-year-old comes out, they start singing it together. And there's one part of the song, and it just stops, and you hear the four-year-old go, "We don't talk about Bruno." And it's just like, they know all the words. They know everything about it. My daughter actually did a review of it with me. She wanted to do it. She wanted to review it.
I love that.
I want to see if I can find the play. We'll talk about it in a second, but if I can find the audio, I'll play you a little of the audio from it. Encanto plays here all of the time. So you loved it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The thing that I'd been missing from a lot of Disney animation songs, I mean, Disney animation films that came out, you know, the past decade is a banger soundtrack. Like, yeah. I grew up on 90s Disney movies. We had like the Hercules soundtrack. It was like every song was a banger. Mulan, every song was a banger. Yep. Yep. And then the ones that have come out the past decade, it was like they might have one or two songs here or one, you know, Raya and the Last Dragon, which I think is great. I don't think it wasn't made to have, you know, a bunch of songs, but I kind of missed that. I kind of missed having like, man, all of these different songs kind of getting stuck in your head and just like really explosive and fun. You know, that style of Colombian music is just so vibrant. And that's another thing I like to put it on and like clean or dance around my place. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, so like I said, the music pops in this house all the time. And even here, let's see if you can hear this.
Who live in a hidden part of Colombia in a magical house. Okay. And all of them have magic powers except for Mirabel, who's the main character. And then their magic starts fading, and Mirabel sort of like tries to like get to the bottom of it. And it's a really sweet movie about family.
Oh, it's a sweet movie about family.
So I take it she didn't like this movie.
She gave me a face. What are you talking about?
No, it's my favorite movie of all time. And my favorite too.
Okay.
Well, maybe not my favorite movie ever, but but I'd say among my favorites of Star Wars and Harry Potter, it's among them.
So you really
love that.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So the kids love it. That's a great one. So for people who haven't seen, I think it's going to win the Oscar. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Or, I don't know what its competition is, but yeah.
Raya and the Last Dragon, which was also pretty good.
Oh, right. It's competing against itself.
It is. And it's also, there's the other one, the Mitchells versus the Machines.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Oh, I haven't seen it. Everyone says
you should watch that. That's so good. That is really good.
I can't get the kids to watch it. They don't want to watch it. And all I hear is how fantastic it is.
Yeah. You watch it, Christian. You do this for yourself.
I know. With all the shit I got to watch, Danny, that I want to watch. I mean, like I said, I just started watching Peacemaker last night. And the problem is that this is what I tell people who watch this show, is that my wife and I only have so much time together, you know, because of the work week, and then she's very picky on the shit that she wants to watch, and understandably so she's with the kids all day long, and we come in, and there's just her taste and my taste are, even though she's like, no, we like a lot of the same things, if I had a dollar for every single time that she was like, I'm not into it, like she turned off Ted Lasso, like, just to show you.
Did she get in a couple? Like, the first episode is always the hardest. It's a pilot. They're setting up everything.
Yeah, she said, I get it. She's like, but I just don't understand why it's as big as it is. And I was like, I got to get back into this. And then all this other shit pops up, and whether it's I'm watching Boba Fett and Peacemaker, and then I'm doing.
Did you watch Succession?
So I watched the first four episodes of Succession. I really like it. That's one I'm going to go back to for sure. I really like
it. You need to finish. Yeah, especially if you're in that like Sopranos type of.
Oh yeah, it's for me. That show is for me. And everybody says the same thing. You gotta watch it. I will. And it was the same thing like Breaking Bad, right? I didn't watch Breaking Bad until there was like two seasons left to go before it finished, and then I binged all of it and was like, yeah, I knew the show was gonna be for me. It's the same thing with Succession. I know that the show's gonna be for me. I know I'm gonna love it. It's just a matter of finding the time to do it. I want to finish Dexter. I want to finish like there's a ton of shit, but. Jumping back to the go-tos for you, there's two movies. Are there any other ones that stand out for you that you say, yeah, that's the one that you gotta be on that page with me, or we can't talk?
I mean, I love Selena too. I think that's so. I wish it had come out in a time when, like, I think it's like Oscar worthy.
Yeah,
you know, it's one of it's. Right? Uh-huh. Yeah, it's so good. She's so good. I think it's her best acting role ever. And it was like her first. Like, it's so good. That, you know, I said the Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. I'm a big Disney head. So like any Toy Story, you know, that I love Toy Story.
A favorite out of the four of them? Is the first one?
The first one.
First one still?
I think that's the case with most movies. Yeah. I mean, I feel that way about, I don't know if this is blasphemous and a bunch of people will write me, but I feel the Tom Holland Spider-Man ones, like my favorite is the first one. I just feel like...
I don't think you get blasted on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I think it's... You know, there's just, it's something about the newness and the, and the story and the, like, it's just, you know, you're focusing on this, these characters. And cause you know, once you start adding sequels, it kind of like spins off into a bunch of things. And so I'm a very like first
pun intended
spins off. Yeah. But yeah.
Did you watch the new one, The New Way Home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you enjoy it or?
I loved the social commentary of it. Yeah. I love that it was so true to Peter Parker and his moral compass. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested to see what they do. I also love Andrew Garfield. He was really sweet. So
yeah, he is. And I love the fact that they can actually talk about it now. And if people are spoiled by it, tough shit.
Oh, oops. I mean, if I saw it, y'all, I saw it like three. I saw it after New Year's. I got really sick and I couldn't go. And so like, y'all, if I like waited like a month to see it, a lot of people and I still that. Ended up seeing it.
It's true. There's so much that I want to see. Like the new Scream movies is just mm-hmm. out. So, I'm so curious about that one because I liked the first one very much. It's one of my favorite Wes Craven movies. It was so different at the time, the way that they played off of it and a little meta. And then the rest of them were fine for me. The people loved the fourth one and I just not a big fan of it, but this one getting big reviews, great reviews. People really, really dig it. So I'm excited to see it. But the problem was that at the moment, because of where we are, I got a 4-year-old who's not able to get vaccinated. And with the rates, what kids are doing right now, I'm like, I'm not going to risk it right now. I really want to see Scream, but I'm not going to risk it at the moment. I will see it. I will check it out. But that's what I'm curious about. Are you a Scream fan?
Oh, yeah. 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 That's same with horror. I feel like that is Halloween. I love Halloween, but I think like the first one, how can you beat the original Scream? Yeah. Same thing. I'm curious to see how they got teenagers to answer the phone. Like, what are they doing there? You know, in this one, I'm curious to see what it's going to end up being because
me too. Cause it looks like they play with it even so in the trailer with how they're playing with the technology of opening up the locks in the house and all that. So yeah, I think that they're going to play with it for sure. All right, Danny, a question now. So let's say I'm going to paint the picture that we come out of this shit in April, May, we're good to go. It seems like the world's getting back together ish. What does 2022 look like for Danny Fernandez?
Your goals? My goal is to focus on acting. I've been, you know, in and out of writers' rooms now throughout the whole pandemic, which I understand is a great privilege. And I am very grateful. And I'm very grateful to my showrunners, and my executives who love my writing. And I'm just ready though, to be more visible. Like, I haven't really gotten to act in anything. I've had big, you know, things here and there, but I haven't really gotten to star in anything and show off my acting chops and all of my acting training and my vulnerability and comedy. And I just feel like I'm ready for that. And I know that is happening. Yeah. Like that is happening this year. And I'm excited about that, but I'm just ready for people to see that side of me. Cause like I said, it was like, I was doing stand up and then hosting and it's like the one thing that I feel like, although a lot of people know I do that, I haven't really gotten to show that and prove myself to people.
Well, I think that it's very similar conversation that I had a couple of years back with like Tiffany Smith. Look at what Tiffany did, right? Like Tiffany was the same type of thing, went into hosting and then that's what she's been doing as far as acting goes too. And I think that when it comes down to, as you just said, I think that you just said the most crucial part of that for anybody who's, no matter what you want to do, whether it's acting or whatever job you want, Dani said it right then. She said, I know it's going to happen. So, and it was like a second thought to her. She just said, that's what you need to do in order to get stuff. That's what you need to do.
Yes, that is my manifesting, one of my many. If anyone that follows me, I'm really big on manifesting, and it's taken so much mental strength to retrain my brain. I get the feeling, you know, snarky and cynical and negative, but it just is not helpful with if you're already dealing with that in this business. You need to just claim it, and so I don't even say it will happen. I just say it is happening. It, you know, because it is. Yeah. And Tiffany and I are actually in a group together, and I love Tiffany. We're so similar. It's like, okay, I'm ready, you know, and she, same thing, you know, she, played Meghan Markle. She, like me, has done some VO stuff and hosting, and like, it's kind of like you have to wear all these hats to even survive out here. Yep. But I think we're both like, let me show you, give me the opportunity to show you what I can do, you know? And so, Same with how a lot of things are getting greenlit that already have existing IP. We see that it's like, why are you remaking this 40 billion times?
Right.
That happens a lot in acting, where it's like, okay, we're just going to pick from these four people who are in my demo because they're already established. Because
right. We know who they are. We want to take a risk on something.
They are. Yeah. But risks is how so many great things, you know, we talk about like Dev Patel being discovered or, you know, that's when I think of, because everyone's like, oh, you have to have a big name to have a big movie. And it was like, no, Slumdog Millionaire ended up like winning an Oscar. And like, so you actually don't, especially if you're doing all these IPs, they already have a fan base behind them. So you should be putting in new people. Mm-hmm.
That's what this town is. This town has always been, we don't want to take a risk, but we want to be the people remembered for taking the risk. Like
my manager, I think he said actually that Reginald Hudlin always says this, that everybody's rushing to be second.
Yeah.
When I deal with that so much, it's like, oh, she's on this. Okay, now we're ready. It's like, okay, let us know once you become famous and then we'll circle back around and want to work with you.
Well, look, there are tons of people that I always go back to. I watched the Rocky's, one of my favorite movies.
And it's
that story where they wanted to pay him like $75,000 and say, that's it. You're making nothing right now. So go take that. And you're not starring in this. Who the hell are you? And he's like, no, I want to star in it. And it's like that story of that. That's why it's always that that's the movie that people always bring back, because it's like, believe in yourself, take the shot, push for what you want. Different business at the time, obviously, in 1974, 75, whatever the hell it was. But you're right. There is this pool, and a lot of people don't want to take that risk. And working in the studio system for as long as I did,
yeah,
saw it all the time. And it was like, well, you know, we want that person, someone like that person, but we don't know. I don't know who that is. So no. And it's like, yeah, but look at the work. And it's why unknowns don't get the shot as much normally. Mm-hmm. And it's also the other thing. Another thing that's why I give you guys so much credit for people who are acting. The problem is that now, especially with streaming, because back in the day, TV, you could go, and if you're unknown, you can make your name in TV and make the move, because there's not a lot of big movie stars that are making the transition. Now, Julia Roberts is doing TV. Everybody's doing streaming now. So it's like there's competition now at even the highest level to get in there and make your move. So, I commend you guys for the it's a grind.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing happened with Issa Rae. Like when she came out and was like, they wanted to recast me, I was like, of course they did. I knew that. Like, of course they did. They wanted to pick somebody else with her own show about her own life, you know? And so now a lot of us creators, I'm so lucky to have a writing background where I can literally write myself into my shows and be like, I'm not giving this to you. I'm not giving you the script unless I can be in it.
Yeah.
Rami also did that as well. And so many of us, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, it's like, you know, everybody now wants to take a chance on her. And a lot of these studios, my manager would ask them, would you have taken a chance on her before she was who she was? And they're like, no. And it's like, okay, well, there you go. How are you going to get new IP, new stories, new people, new faces, new talent, new ideas? So that's where I'm at for this year. That's where I've been at. But now I know this year is like going to be a big turning point.
Well, I think that's for everybody out there who's listening, that you should take that, and you should, and you really, because we get comments like that a lot a lot of times people asking, even when it comes to stuff like podcasting on how to do it, because there's so many people doing it in YouTube. Listen to what Danny said. Put the positivity out there. Get yourselves in that spirit. And I know it's tough. The last 2 years, it's been tough for a lot of people. But I do feel we're at the light at the end of the tunnel. I really do feel that. And maybe that's me putting at that philosophy that Danny just talked about. So either way, Danny, it was so nice to talk to you after a bit. So we should do this again.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Of course, thanks for letting me geek out
about my movies and talk about shrooms.
That was pretty fascinating. But the other thing is, when you're able to talk about your show, why don't you come back here and let's do that as well?
Yeah, I will.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Danny Fernandez, please go and follow her on Twitter, Miss Danny Fernandez. You see it right there. And once again, everybody, don't forget about those tiers. It is patreon.com/SENLive. Check it out today. Do not forget about Spotify. Don't forget about Apple Podcasts. All that and more. You got so much. Appreciate you guys. Hit those comments, because I comment all of them back. You know that. It takes me a while, and that's a good thing, but I do it. All right, everybody. Thank you to Danny. Thank you, you guys. See you next time.